Welcome to the latest installment of the Science Progress interview series. Science Progress is a magazine about progressive science and technology policy. We connect the work of scientists, technologists, and policymakers working for the common good. In this installment, Andrew Pratt speaks with David Hayes about rethinking carbon offsets under the framework of cap and trade. David Hayes is a former consulting professor at Stanford University's Woods Institute for the Environment, a partner at Latham & Watkins, a senior fellow at the World Wildlife Fund, and a senior fellow at the Progressive Policy Institute.
The first question is, you see a problem with the word offsets itself, and you argue in your paper that the term has been used so uselessly as to have virtually no meaning. And instead you suggest that the term compliance credits would be better. And my question is, what would compliance credits provide that the current conception of offsets does not?
Well, right now, offsets—the concept of offsets is in the U.S. Completely unregulated, mm-hmm. And there are many organizations that will sell you as an individual something they're calling a carbon offset, and that's very attractive to many individuals and businesses because they're interested in counterbalancing their carbon footprint. And they need help. There are obviously things individuals can do to reduce their carbon footprint in terms of buying a more efficient automobile and reducing energy at home, et cetera. But there's no getting around the fact that individuals and businesses typically cannot get to zero without investing in an outside project that will remove carbon that otherwise would go into the atmosphere. And entrepreneurs have responded, and well-meaning organizations have responded, but it's unregulated, and there are significant questions about whether many of the offsets that are being sold into the unregulated market have environmental integrity and are, in fact, reducing carbon in a way that otherwise would not occur anyway without folks buying these offsets. So it's a very slippery term and almost a meaningless term. Carbon credits, rather compliance credits, are a special type of offset, if you will, that would come into play in connection with the adoption of a new mandatory cap-and-trade system. Mm-hmm. And it would be fundamentally different in kind than today's offset because, unlike today's unregulated environment, a compliance offset would only be approved if it met stringent standards established by EPA and policed by EPA, and those standards need to have strong integrity because this category of offsets could be used to establish compliance with the emissions limitations that will be established under the cap and trade system.
Mm-hmm. So could you maybe walk me through an example of how that would work under a cap and trade system for a company?
Sure. Well, let me provide you a little more context first, if I can. The idea of a cap and trade system, of course, is that most carbon emissions, greenhouse gas emissions, would be capped under this system. They would be regulated. There would be a limit on most sources of greenhouse gases. And over time, that cap would be shrunk, and the limits would become tighter. And that's how we would reduce, over time, our carbon emissions. Mm-hmm. However, as a practical matter, we're not going to be able to capture all emission sources under a cap and trade system. There will remain a and a significant number of emission sources, maybe 20% of the total, that are unregulated under this cap-and-trade system. The concept of an offset, if you will, quote-unquote, in a cap-and-trade system, is that we provide an incentive to reduce emissions from these otherwise unregulated emission sources. And further, some projects that reduce these otherwise unregulated sources may be of a high enough quality and enforceable and with enough assurance that they can be used to demonstrate emissions reductions by the regulated entities that have these responsibilities to reduce their emissions. And that's what a compliance credit is all about. And that's so it's a fundamentally different construct. The idea of offsets is a fundamentally different construct when you have a mandatory cap and trade system. Now, instead of just opening up a bazaar for the sale of unregulated offsets, now there's a policy goal of seeing if we can incentivize reductions in those emission sources that are not covered by the cap and that are otherwise left to continue unabated. So that's the further context.
Okay. No, that makes good sense. So, for instance, some of the industries that would obviously fall under the cap-and-trade regulation might be power plants. If, for instance, I was operating a power plant, could you walk me through a little bit of the process about how I would be able to function under a cap-and-trade system for my emissions and then account for some of those using these compliance credits and what kind of projects those compliance credits might support?
Sure. If you operate a power plant, you are going to need to obtain allowances that will match your emissions. Mm-hmm. The allowances will be in the form of a right, basically, to emit carbon dioxide or another greenhouse gas in the amount in which you're emitting it. And there will be a number of sources that you can utilize to obtain these allowances. You're going to have to purchase some allowances, mm-hmm. Probably through an auction, mm-hmm. and in fact, most of the allowances that you will need will probably be purchased in that way. You're going to have some control yourself in terms of how much in terms of allowances you're going to have to purchase, because if you make investments and reduce your emissions more than you are required to under the cap, mm-hmm. you're going to generate your own allowances, and if you don't need them, you're going to be able to sell them to another power plant. That's the whole idea of the trade part of cap and trade. Mm-hmm. Another source for some allowances will be, under my scheme, compliance credits. That is proven reductions of carbon that are obtained from unregulated sources. And those credits can essentially be purchased by the power plant to help meet a part of their budget, if you will, for allowances. Again, they're going to need allowances to cover all their emissions. Mm-hmm. And under my proposal and the Lieberman-Warner proposal, there's a limit on how much of the budget can be met through these compliance credits of 15%, and that's just to make sure that the compliance credit notion doesn't become the dog and not the tail. It should be the tail. It should be the a sort of additional grease to the system. But the primary focus of cap and trade has to be on major emission sources making investments in their own reductions.
Mm-hmm. Now, the compliance credits that, for instance, a power plant might be able to invest some of their allowances in, these might be going to projects of different sorts. And you're very careful to explain in your paper that not all emissions reducing projects are created equal, which is why
right.
some would fall under the compliance the strict rules of your compliance credits.
Right.
And so measuring emissions from different projects, particularly
yes.
in forestry and agriculture, you say, can be difficult. It can
right.
be imperfect and make it hard to verify their impact. So could you talk just a little bit more about the importance of splitting the carbon reduction credits between sort of these top-tier compliance credits? And you talk about tier two projects, which
right.
wouldn't necessarily fall into that category.
Right. This is a very important concept. Let me go back to the broader context here. What we should be interested in as a policy matter in a cap-and-trade system is, on the one side of the ledger, capping major emission sources and reducing those emissions in a regulated way.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, we should also give attention to unregulated emission sources and the compliance credit idea fits over there. But we really should be thinking about providing a range of incentives to reduce these emission sources that are otherwise unregulated. Now, compliance credits are sort of the gold standard, if you will. They're going to be the surefire, verifiable projects that everyone is so confident are providing new emissions reductions that they can be used for compliance purposes over on the regulated side. But there are lots of other incentives that can be provided for to reduce emissions from unregulated sources. Besides the formation of a tradable compliance credit, and we have lots of those incentives already. You know, there are incentives for you and me to buy a Prius.
Mm-hmm.
There are lots of programs at the state and local level, for example, to encourage folks to reduce electricity, weatherize their home. There are any number of additional incentives that are in the public domain to reduce emissions further beyond those that are regulated. I think it's important that we recognize that, and this is what I call tier two, recognize that there are a basket of incentives already in place to reduce emissions that otherwise are unregulated. We should identify those incentives. We should have a disciplined way to see how they're working, to see how cost effective they are, and that will it will provide a number of benefits. One, it will help us decide which of these incentives are working best. It'll give us more information about emissions from these sources that are otherwise unregulated, and in some cases, it may identify real opportunities for major emissions reductions that can qualify or should qualify for this tier one idea of a compliance credit.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the other advantage of thinking about tier one and tier two together is that it takes some of the pressure off of forcing projects into tier one, into this compliance credit, the gold standard. If you don't have sort of a suite of incentives, then there's enormous pressure that that projects that shouldn't qualify for compliance credits will be pushed into qualifying because it's, as I explained in my paper, it's sort of an all or nothing. You know, either you get the pot of gold and you create a project that reduces carbon in a way that is meets these tests and has real value on the carbon market, or you're left with nothing. And that sort of stark on-off switch can lead to a lack of discipline in how compliance credits are awarded. Now, to your question about ag and forestry and measurement,
mm-hmm.
In ag and forestry in particular, there are special challenges in just in terms of the science with regard to how you measure reductions of carbon. Now, I do not think that all ag and forestry projects have to be in Tier 2 and can only be incentivized through means other than a compliance credit. I think there are some projects that may well qualify for compliance credits. My point is simply that these challenges of measurement are going to have to be confronted and addressed. There may be ways to do it by, for example, discounting estimates of reductions so that one is certain that a compliance credit is only giving credit for the core reduction that there's no question is being produced by an ag or forestry project. But my point is simply that it's going to be harder for ag and forestry to meet the compliance credit test, but for ag and forestry, like for other unregulated sectors, we should look at the whole suite of incentives and apply all of them and see what makes the most sense.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, we've covered a whole lot of ground, but I wanted to jump ahead to another question that I think
yep.
might be related to this, the difference between compliance credits and these Tier 2 possibilities. And that is, you know, how would a well-regulated climate change incentive program change the current voluntary retail market that we discussed earlier for carbon offsets, things that consumers buy to counterbalance emissions from plane travel, commuting, or home energy use? You suggest in your paper that this voluntary market for offsets could still exist
right.
even under a cap and trade regime, but that you know, specifically a retail market might also need to fall under the Federal Trade Commission. Can you talk a little bit about how that voluntary market for offsets could still exist with more regulation for these compliance credits?
Sure. Well, it's interesting. You know, one might think that the voluntary market would evaporate once you have a comprehensive cap and trade system in place. You know, because much of the voluntary market is taken up by companies that are that recognize that they're going to have compliance obligations and are sort of putting their toe in the water
mm-hmm.
and trying to hedge their carbon risk. Well, once you have a full cap and trade system, they're covered by the system, and they've got, you know, their path is clear in terms of what their obligations are. So there's certainly less impetus for a voluntary market from them. But I'm persuaded from my work at Stanford and also the experience in Europe, where a voluntary market continues to thrive alongside the mandatory Kyoto market, I'm persuaded that there's enough interest in experimentation in terms of investments in projects that may produce carbon reductions that there are investors willing to invest in carbon reduction projects that are voluntary and that do not provide a benefit that has regulatory significance. And I think it's fine to let the markets continue to do that.
Mm-hmm.
If there are willing buyers and sellers that are essentially experimenting and developing ideas for additional carbon reduction projects that later might mature into something that has regulatory significance, all the power to them. What we don't want, though, is for the ordinary citizen to be forced to either be a sophisticated investor in the voluntary market or be left to the vagaries of an unregulated market. There are two ways to address this. The first way, which I think will be very attractive to some individuals and businesses that want to reduce their carbon footprint but aren't required to, the first way is to provide access for these folks to buy the compliance credits that are the gold standard, regulated, proven reductions that a regulated entity can purchase and use for regulatory purposes. Well, we ought to let individuals and businesses also purchase those and retire them. And if we provide that opportunity, those folks will know that they're investing in a project that has real carbon benefits. And presumably those will be more expensive than what they would buy on the unregulated voluntary market, but they would know that they were getting what they paid for. Mm-hmm. The other point is that if there is a voluntary market that continues, and I think there should be, there needs to at least be more regulatory oversight by the Federal Trade Commission so that there's not outright fraud and misrepresentation in terms of what is being sold. But again, my guess is that the responsible individuals and businesses that are really most interested in proving up that they are, if they're purchasing carbon offsets, quote unquote, that they're getting everything they want to get, then the opportunity to purchase compliance credit will be attractive.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, let me ask about the Lieberman-Warner bill itself. What are the prospects for a system like this getting incorporated into the final version of that legislation? And why precisely should offsets or a new thinking on offsets take regulatory priority upon the eventual enactment of a successful bill?
Well, let me say at the outset, I don't think that offset should take regulatory priority. Mm-hmm. Offsets are grease. They're not the motor. Mm-hmm. The motor is the cap and the mandated reductions under the cap, the auction of allowances. The offset concept is really more at the margin. I think it's important, though, for a variety of reasons I explain in my paper, and actually has a very positive policy role here because the whole incentive structure, Tier 1 and Tier 2 together, can help focus on otherwise unregulated emission sources. But it's not the main event. I do think it's important that when legislation is passed, that we get on with the task of identifying standards and protocols for projects that meet compliance credit standards, because there are investors out there interested in investing in projects that qualify. Well, EPA needs to get on it. I mean, it's very unfortunate that the current EPA isn't well down the road in terms of doing this. But of course, they've been held back by the policy decisions of the Bush administration. In terms of the prospects of Lieberman-Warner developing this kind of program, The bill that was introduced in the fall has an offsets title in it that has some features of the program that I'm laying out in more detail. I've been working in the last few months with the folks at Duke's Nicholas School revising the language, and I think we will be seeing revised language introduced, I hope, within the next month for Lieberman-Warner that will include more of the features that I'm talking about in my paper. As for the prospects of Lieberman-Warner this year, that's a bigger question that certainly is not going to turn on the question of how offsets are addressed. It's a bigger political issue, and I certainly hope that legislation moves. Even if it doesn't, I think that the debate in the next few months is extremely important because it will establish the baseline, if you will, of sensible legislation that will then, I hope, move very quickly when a new president is elected.
Mm-hmm. Well, that covers a whole lot of ground. I guess I would just sort of want to wrap up by asking, is there anything else that we haven't touched on that you would want to remark on in closing?
I guess in closing, I would only, the primary point I'd like to get across to folks is that I think it's really it's difficult but very important to do a sort of 180 in everyone's perception about offsets, because today most folks have a very negative view about offsets that is appropriately negative given the unregulated way that offsets are being dealt with today. But if we have a regulated cap and trade system that leaves some sources out of it, as we will, then creating an incentive structure to deal with those emissions reductions makes enormous policy sense. It's tough for folks to do that 180 turn and to look at the world in a different way. But the world is going to be very different if we have a mandatory cap-and-trade system. And in that context, there is a place for compliance credits and for a broader incentive structure to deal with these unregulated emission sources. I'm proselytizing out there and looking for converts and asking folks to be nimble in their thinking and to be willing to shed their understandable predilections against offsets, because we're talking about a very different context and a very different regulatory world.
Well, that seems like quite a task, but it sounds like you're heading well along that path. Well, thank you so much for your time.
My pleasure, Andrew.
And good talking to you.
Likewise. Thanks.
Bye now.
Bye.